Hello and welcome to The Scoop, a provincial newscast and podcast with stories from LJI journalists around British Columbia. Each week, reporters from Revelstoke, Cortes Island, Kootenay, Terrace, Prince George, and Smithers will share the news affecting their place in BC. I'm your host and producer, Pamela Hassan, from CSCK News in Smithers. The Scoop was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program, or LJI. Follow The Scoop on CICK, Smithers Community Radio, 93.9 FM, every Thursday and Saturday at noon, online at smithersradio.com, and of course, wherever you get your podcasts.
Today on The Scoop, North Vancouver Mayor Mike Little says housing and transit updates are key election issues for his community. Danny Nesvrandi at CJSF in Burnaby has more. The Afro-Caribbean Society of Northern BC is feeling positive following the completion of Phase 1 of its United Way-funded project, Black Faces Anti-Racism Project. Ian Gregg at CIFA Radio in Prince George has that story. And Nanaimo Ladysmith candidates have officially been declared for the federal election. Lauren McKenzie at CHLY Nanaimo brings us that story. And the Liberal candidate for Skeena-Bulkley Valley is declared, but won't be showing up at any debates. Dan Messick in Smithers has more.
In advance of Canada's April 28th federal election, CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby is presenting a series of interviews with the mayors of British Columbia's Lower Mainland. This series will give each a chance to share what they see as the most important issues for voters in their city, what they would like to see from members of parliament elected within their municipality, and why this election is particularly important for their constituents. I'm Danny Nesvedarani, and in this interview, I speak with the mayor of the District of North Vancouver, Mike Little. In this interview, Mayor Little identifies housing and transit as two primary issues for the North Shore during this election. He also speaks on Canada's current trade relations and how he believes the federal government should navigate its current relations with the United States. Please take a listen.
I think the top issues would be housing and infrastructure, and it's where we hear it all day, every day, throughout our community. The infrastructure, including transit, highways, and some of the regional infrastructure, like the wastewater treatment plant, we need to sit down with our federal representatives and hammer out a better arrangement for delivering those kinds of civil infrastructure pieces. And that's going to require federal dollars being a significant component of building that infrastructure.
When you say federal dollars, I guess, how do you propose that the newly elected federal government provides that?
Well, they can have... they can really simplify it and just say, we're going to be a partner with you, one-third, 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 with the feds, the province, and the municipalities on significant regional infrastructure. That way, when we're negotiating with the provincial government, we know that it's going to be matched, and we'll have the ability to produce the infrastructure that our communities needs. We're definitely in a deficit position in terms of producing infrastructure, Second Arrows Bridge just being one example. We haven't had a lane increase there since 1968, and to the North Shore in total, and that bridge is not meeting our needs now, let alone the growth targets that we have going forward into the future. And you see it every single day with lineups over 10 kilometers in either direction. It's a piece of infrastructure that needs to be addressed.
I guess one question I would have regarding housing is, when it comes to the District of North Vancouver specifically, I think one thing that is often brought up as a concern has to do with managing housing infrastructure with road infrastructure, so to make sure that the housing matches what is available in terms of, as you mentioned, say lanes on Second Narrows. So how do you hope the federal government sort of collaborates with the province and the municipal government of the District of North Vancouver in order to ensure that those needs are met, not just for housing, but also for road work as well?
Yeah, well, we definitely have a challenge in the North Shore where the market does want to produce new housing units on the North Shore, but they want to produce very premium products. And so if we don't have significant assistance from the provincial or federal government, then we're largely going to be making the problem worse. Instead of being able to get people who work on the North Shore to be able to live on the North Shore, we'll still be a bedroom community for downtown at a premium price. And that's going to exacerbate our bridge infrastructure even more. So we need the contributions from the federal government to be more significant. We recently did the Housing Accelerator Fund program with the federal government, and their initial proposal was that they were going to assist by $9,000 a housing unit, which barely even pays for the door. And so then they came back with a revision that would make it up to $27,000. Well, I got to tell you, they're not constructing it for under $300,000. So it's less than 10% off of market, even if there's no uplift on the construction cost. And so it's not actually going to be producing an affordability that will help us address the transportation problem. So the federal government needs to be a partner in a way that's actually going to address this affordability piece.
In the District of North Vancouver specifically, does that look like sort of a mixed model in terms of what sort of housing is being built and provided?
We're well underway to developing our town centers with mixed tenures, mixed sizes, mixed unit types. But again, if I'm left to the market, the municipalities have so few tools to create affordability that it costs me about 9 market units in order to be able to produce one affordable unit. And so without additional infrastructure or additional financial support from the province or the feds. And so I'm ostensibly making the traffic problem worse in order to be able to produce at 1 in 10 rate for an affordable unit. So it isn't working. It's not actually helping us solve the live close to where you work issue. The North Shore has actually been a very good producer of new jobs, and they're very well paid jobs. Most of our port positions are 6-figure jobs, but to start to buy housing on the North Shore, you have to have a pretty massive down payment, which makes it very hard for people to be able to get into the housing market unless they're being handed some capital through inheritance or something. And so we need a much more significant assistance from the provincial and federal government in order to make that new housing be in the affordable range.
Moving on from housing a little bit, with this federal election specifically, how would you say it's different from, you know, the previous federal election that you had served as mayor for? Would you say that some of the concerns you're hearing from residents of North Vancouver are a little different than last time?
Housing and transportation have been a generational issue on the North Shore, so it's spanned a few election processes. I would definitely say the relationship with the United States has changed the flavor of this year's election. And there's no question that we, you know, even though I haven't been a supporter of the government, I do think that one Team Canada approach to trade is critically important, because theoretically there's a time when you're going to resume and normalize trade between our countries, and you want to be able to untangle the web as quickly as you can in order to be able to support that. And so it's a challenge. Everybody out there wants us to take direct action against the United States, and I don't know that that's the best strategy for correcting our trade relationship going forward.
Is what do you believe is best for addressing trade going forward?
Well, rule number one of a trade war is get out of the trade war. that's got to be your primary objective, is to get back to low barrier trade between our two countries. I've worked in trade, specifically lumber, for a very long time as my job outside of politics, and it's going to have a devastating effect on a lot of small towns that are single resource towns in British Columbia, and they're going to be very challenged to survive through this battle. We need to resolve it as quickly as we can and get back to low barrier trade between our countries.
That was my interview with District of North Vancouver Mayor Mike Little, outlining what he sees as the top priority issues for the District of North Vancouver's residents in the upcoming April 28th federal election. Stay tuned to CJSF 90.1 FM for more interviews in this series featuring mayors from other municipalities across the Lower Mainland.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca. Joining us today in CIFA Radio Studios is Ekpeno John Ukut, president of the Afro-Caribbean Society of Northern BC, Phase 1 of their Black Faces Anti-Racism Project, or BFARP, is wrapping up. Ekpeno, the Afro-Caribbean Society of Northern BC has an office based here in Prince George, Clalitene Territory. Thank you so much for joining us in CIFA Radio Studios this morning.
Thank you very much for having me.
BFARP. This project is occurring across three communities simultaneously.
Yes.
Which communities are they, and why did you choose these communities to start your project with?
So for now, although the organization, you know, covers the entire northern BC, but we had to select three northern communities that we know that we have a greater number of blacks resident in those communities. Prince George, of course, the capital of the northern, you know, BC, where we reside and where the project is starting. And then we also have in Smithers, we also have in Fort St. James. There are other, you know, parts of northern BC that we intend to have. But it's just that for now, we wanted to limit it to certain number of, you know, communities where we have a larger number of blacks resident there in a bid for us to be able to have more community engagement.
I suppose within the BFARP project, was there a particular mission statement?
For us, what we set out to achieve in the project is to help build community resilience and, you know, help, you know, support the mental health of community members. And in a bid for us to do that, that's how we were able to bring out numerous activities to help us achieve that, build community resilience, and then support, foster that unity and support the mental health of community members. So, you know, things like counseling, we have lots of counseling sessions. People have come in beyond only Prince George, because the way the counseling session goes, even our funders, the United Way, they also refer people to us from Vancouver, you know, for counseling. So we have physical counseling and we also have virtual counseling. Whichever one the, you know, community member requires, we have opportunities for that. And we have the sharing circle, which is also a secondary approach to counseling itself. And with lots of other activities that help build that community resilience that we are, you know, talking about. So the project started in October, you know, between October and the 1st of March. We did a lot, but the project, the first phase of this project ended on the 31st of March. So far, it has been an eventful one. There have been connections. There have been very meaningful conversations with community members. There have been very interesting revelations from community members where you really get to hear and know things that you wouldn't have known. A community member who, you know, came from Smithers for one of our sharing circle events, you know, clearly told us what she has been through. She's from South Africa. And so she explained clearly during the sharing circle the kind of treatment that she has received since she arrived, Canada generally. And this experience that she explained wasn't that new to some of us, because there are people who have experienced similar thing. So, which was the essence of the sharing circle. So we could share thoughts among ourselves and, you know, discuss and advise accordingly. Oh, maybe you can try this. So that's the essence of the sharing circle, which goes a long way to boost, you know, people's mental health. Because one of the things that we have, you know, noticed during our sharing circle is the fact that some community members are facing different kinds of, you know, mental health challenges as a result of different forms of racism, racial abuses, and all that.
I understand setting up an office was also an important part of this project. Do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Our office is quite an interesting space. And why it is an interesting space is that it's not just an office. It is a safe space. So in our office, we have our counseling room, where if you even go there, you understand why we had to call it a counseling room, because it is actually a big space where people who are facing one form of racial abuses or mental health, you know, challenges or the other, go in there to have conversations with counselors. And we have in-house counselors. And we have counselors, you know, from different races. And the reason for that is so that anybody who comes in, you know, will always say, okay, I prefer this counselor, or I prefer that counselor. And so whichever counselor that you prefer, we will always, you know, make that counselor available. So our office space is there, you know, which is a safe space for a lot of Black community members and even people who are not. Mind you, for the Afro-Caribbean societies, it's not only Blacks that are in the society. So we have members who are not Blacks, who are even Canadians. So what we do is that as long as, you know, issues that relate to Blacks are close to your heart, you can come and inform us and we will have you as one of our team members.
So within a lot of these discussions, you know, you began to find some common ground that people had with one another.
Yes.
And do you want to elaborate on any of that common ground before we get into, you know, what some of the actions that were identified as a priority? We should start here to address that. How'd you get to that point?
One of the common grounds that we came to realize during the course of this project was the issue of participation, community participation from community members. A lot of people would love to get involved in certain things. But when they sit back and look at the fact that, oh, they just realize that actually they are Black. And that kind of, you know, detaches them a little bit and they pull back. And that happens to a lot of people. And one very critical thing that we also came to realize, which also, you know, keys into the first one, is the fact that, you know, despite all this, the Blacks, they are strong, they are resilient, they go all out. You see, during the course of our conversations, we keep on making this same statement that when other people do certain things 70%, when you see a typical Black person, the person will want to do that thing 125%. Not because the person wants to show off, but basically because the person feels like, maybe if I do 70% too, I might not be seen. If I do 70% too, they might not really recognize me. So the person goes all out to do 125% in a bid to at least put his or herself there in that space. And that's a very common thing that went across everybody that we, you know, that have come into this project. People kept on saying similar thing, that they do twice as more. They just wanted, you know, they just want to be heard. They want to be seen. So in a bid for you to be seen and heard, you need to do twice as more as other people are doing. So for us, that has been a very key thing that has, you know, that has cut across all the conversations that we've had throughout the course of the project, through in across all the events that we've had. That conversation has, you know, continued to go back and forth that, oh, we do twice as hard. We work twice as hard.
Is Ekpeno John Ukut, president of the Afro-Caribbean Society of Northern BC, phase one of their Black Faces Anti-Racism Project, or BFARP, is wrapping up. Thank you so much for joining us in CIFA Radio Studios this morning.
Thank you very much.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM.
This is a CHOI News Update. The deadline for candidates to apply for the riding has officially passed, and Elections Canada has put out the official list of who voters in the Nanaimo-Ladysmith riding will see on their ballot. In the Nanaimo-Ladysmith riding, there are five candidates on the ballot. The incumbent, Lisa Marie Barron, with the federal NDP. Liberal Party of Canada candidate, Michelle Corfield. Tamara Cronus, with the Conservative Party of Canada. Green Party of Canada candidate, Paul Manley. And Stephen Wilton, with the People's Party of Canada. This year's ballot reflects the 2021 federal election when each of the current candidates also ran. CHY reached out to each of the candidates to see how the election has been going for them. Former Member of Parliament Paul Manley is once again running for the Green Party of Canada. He held the role as MP for the riding from 2019 until losing his seat to Lisa Marie Barron in 2021. Manley told CHY that he feels there are a lot of challenges currently facing Canadians, with tariffs and threats to Canadian sovereignty from the United States, but affordability is top of mind for him.
Affordable housing's been a serious problem for a number of years now, and I used to be the executive director at the Nanaimo Unitarian Shelter, so I've seen lots of people at the shelter door who shouldn't be at the shelter door, including working people, low-income seniors, people with disabilities, even had a VIU student there at one point.
He says hospitals are overcrowded and too many people in Nanaimo do not have a family doctor.
At the same time, we've seen huge inequality in our country. We've gone from multimillionaires to multi-billionaires with the tax cuts that they've received, you know, over the last three decades. And ordinary people are struggling. The services that we rely on have been cut. And we have a lot of problems based on that, including the affordability crisis, the lack of affordable housing, and our healthcare crisis.
Incumbent Lisa Marie Barron with the New Democrat Party says she has been spending this election getting out into the community to hear from people on what issues they are currently facing.
You know, one thing I love about elections and about putting my name forward in elections that I'm spending all day, every day talking to people in the community, you know, hearing what's important to them, hearing about the path forward. And, you know, what's really clear when I'm knocking on doors is that people are rightfully so really worried about what our future looks like for our kids and our grandkids. I'm hearing from so many people about the concern of having a pure polyev conservatives in power.
She says it is important this election that everyone gets out and votes.
There's clearly so much support out there, which is wonderful to see, but I'm not going to deny it's not, you know, we know it's going to be tight. And so, you know, just talking to people about how important it is that they're out voting and bringing friends with them to vote this election, because I think with a good voter turnout, we have every reason to be optimistic.
None of the other candidates in the riding got back to CHY by the deadline. While many of the candidates are still going door to door to speak with residents, there are still several opportunities for voters to hear from the candidates at upcoming candidate forums in the community. Election day is April 28th, with advance voting happening April 18th until the 21st. Information on where to vote in the advance voting and on election day can be found at www.elections.ca. For CHY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
Today on CSK News. With less than 2 weeks until election day, today we speak with Inderpal Dhillon, the Liberal candidate for Skeena-Bulkley Valley. Currently, Mr. Dhillon is a city councillor in Terrace, but hopes to be a Liberal MP come election day on April 28th. Although Liberal candidates have largely only received about a 10% share of the vote or less in the riding of Skeena-Bulkley Valley over the past 20 years, Mr. Dhillon is looking to change that. Here's my conversation with Liberal candidate for Skeena-Bulkley Valley, Inderpal Dhillon. Stay with us.
So my name is Inderpal Dhillon. I moved to Canada in 2009 as an immigrant. In India, I was a pharmacist over there. So when I moved to Canada in 2009, so first I moved 6 months in Calgary. After that, I moved to Surrey. I lived over there for 1 year. In 2010, I got my first business with the help of my friends and family. So I moved to Terrace in 2010. And after that, my business Catholic started. So after every year, my portfolio grows, and I have almost 15 businesses all over BC. In 2022, then I think that, you know, the community which helped me so much in my success. So then I think, yeah, it's time to pay back to my community. So then I step up for council. So then I elected as a city councillor. So now I'm a city councillor too at City of Terrace. So when Mark Carney put his name forward, and then I think now it's time to join Mark Carney's team, because, you know, all this economy stuff going on and all these things going with the U.S. Now it's my duty to step up and to build our Canada strong.
I have to say, Inderpal, you know, the Liberals have been in power for the last 10 years. You know, at the beginning of February, we saw a terrible polling numbers that the Conservatives were riding very high. And the Liberals way behind, almost about, you know, 25 points. Obviously, things are different now. Your party has gotten rid of Trudeau. Things have turned around with Prime Minister Mark Carney, and looks favorable now. But the Liberals have had the last 10 years to work on a lot of these issues, you know, especially housing and affordability. You know, although it has been more of an acute issue in these last number of years since COVID and high inflation and interest rates, but they've had about 10 years to deal with a lot of these issues and really haven't. You know, why should people vote for the Liberals in this case? This time around,
because you know Mark Carney come up with lot of good projects, lot of good long term projects. He is like economist. He know how to deal with these kind of situation. So you know, like when we go to doctor, so if we have like something problem in our like body part, so he always refer us to specialist. So in this situation, if we see who is specialist, Mark Carney is the specialist. He knows how to deal with this situation. He already have like plan for next like 10 years. He has a plan for housing, how we can build that housing. For supporting that housing, he already has a plan how we can create workers, how we can support workers, how we can support them, how we can support unions, how we can do good for our seniors, how we can do good for our defense, for our health, to deal with that that auto tariffs, which is by U.S. and all and that carbon tax, to deal with the environment, support for the farmers. So he has plan of everything.
One other question for you, Inderpal. You know, we obviously have a very large riding here, and all the candidates, you know, have a challenge of getting out there, door knocking, long hours on the road, trying to meet people, you know, where they at. The riding is, you know, the size of Poland. You know, one riding in Canada, one of the largest ridings in Canada, the size of Poland. So a lot of distance to go, but we also have debates, and we have debates in all the major towns in Terrace and Kitimat and Prince Rupert. There's one this evening in Houston, another one in Burns Lake. But it seems that you haven't shown up to the debates yet. Why is that? And are you planning to attend these debates so that people can see you and test you against the other candidates?
Actually, you know, because I got my tickets like last minute. So as you already said that this is very vast like riding. So I will make sure that I will see each and every individual. You know, like in this riding, it's almost 37,000 houses. So I will try to make sure that I will meet everyone from one end to another, so that I can give a message of our PM and future PM Mark Carney to each and every individual that he has very good plans for our Skeena Bulkley Valley. So that's why, you know, actually I didn't go on the debates, because, you know, I'm just trying to manage as much I can meet the people from one end to another end. You know, I was in Burns Lake for 2-3 days. I was in Stewart. So after talking with you, I'm just going again on the road. I just start 5:30 in the morning. I just meet people again. So because your like interview was like for 5-10 minutes, so that's why I just schedule you in.
Okay, Inderpal, we'll leave it there for now. But thank you so much for your time and insight, and good luck on the campaign trail.
Thank you so much, and thank you so much.
That was Inderpal Dhillon, Liberal candidate for the riding of Skeena Bulkley Valley.
And that's this week's episode of The Scoop, a podcast and broadcast featuring stories from remote BC by the journalists in the communities of Smithers, Cortez Island, Revelstoke, Kootenay, Prince George, and Terrace. This program was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program. Tune in next week for another episode, and follow us online wherever you get your podcasts.